Hey everyone, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Jerry.
And we are back. It's been about a month. We got so much to talk about, and it's going to feel like we have so little time, but there's a lot of things to cover here. We've had SCG Baltimore, SCG Columbus, Dominaria United's released, and the rules are broken. It's in chaos everywhere in the Legacy world. We'll get into that a little bit later. But Jerry, how have you been, my man? What have you been up to?
I've been very good, Rob, since our trip to Baltimore. Been doing RCQ, a couple local small events, but other than that, the RCQ was fun. Got absolutely destroyed and on all the reasons Modern is great right now.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, Baltimore had its ups and its downs, I think, for definitely for you and I. Definitely some more ups for some other players. I've participated in RCQ, didn't go too hot, and have really just been kind of hanging out, trying to figure out what's going on work-related in my schedule. I might be going out to Washington State for a week. We'll see. I might be deploying here soon for a few weeks here and there, so we'll see how that goes. We'll make sure to keep everybody posted on that so that you understand why there's a gap in the release of podcast episodes. All right, so we went to Baltimore over, or whenever the event did happen. This has been, about 3 or 4 weeks now, Jerry?
Yeah, something like that, about a month.
And we had five of us show up from the Snapcast. We got you to fly out from Indiana. We had Tyler and Sean drive up from the Jacksonville area. We had myself. And who is our fifth?
It was you, me, John.
Oh yeah, and John. That's right. Yeah, and John came up too with Tyler and Sean.
Yep, you, me, John, Tyler, and Sean.
Yep. So we had our team set up. It was me, Jerry, and John. And decklist choices absolutely got the best of us on that one. I definitely should not have played the deck that I played. I ended up going with a red-green kind of like Monsters, Eldrazi-style list. But the list I should have absolutely played is what, Jerry, you were on Sunday, and we'll get to that here in a little bit. John ended up playing... What was John on?
John was on Dredge.
That's right. John I think, was a good choice.
He went 2-2 on the day.
Yep.
Which is fine. But it's okay if both the other two players are doing better as a result.
Yes. You ended up playing Elves for the day.
Yep, and I had one loss until we dropped.
Yep.
And that loss was to a really wild Bant pile.
Yeah.
It involved Uro, Life from the Loam. It was pretty... he had Force of... Basically, the game's devolved into he had Force of Will at the key time on key green spells.
Yeah. Me, I did not bank on there being so many of the most popular deck. That is mono green. My playing on Modo, I played up against it, I think, two or three times across multiple leagues. And it was a decent matchup. And it's like, well, you know, if I can kind of avoid it, we should do well. Well, that wasn't the case. I remember my first matchup that I won. It was actually a very... what should have been a difficult matchup. It was Spirits, and I absolutely wiped the floor with them. But for the rest of the day, it was mono green, mono green, mono green, mono green.
Yeah. Some highlights for me on the Elves, Legacy Elves side. I recovered from a Cataclysm. The board state after the Cataclysm was a single Virtual Ranger and a Dryad Arbor, and afterwards, I ended up having five Elves, a Gaia's Cradle, and a Dryad Arbor on the next turn. And I turned it around on a Delver player with a Glimpse that turned into seven cards.
Nice.
So those were some of the bigger highlights of the day.
Yeah, and we had to upgrade the list that we had, so we were able to get that from Chris, which huge thanks, Chris, for mailing out your fully built-out Elves list. I know it's not easy for some people to mail, you know, about a $5,000 Magic deck, but Chris is a homie and hooked us up. But the changes we made to it, Jerry, with the Elvish Reclaimer, absolute powerhouse in this deck.
Yeah, it was the best card in the deck. Elves was at one time more dedicated to trying to do the Elf Ball thing, try to do the Wombo combo. The combo is less more the plan and more of using Glimpse to just draw you three or four cards.
Gotcha.
The elf itself, ability to find any land you want, is super powerful.
Yeah.
Finding Bajuka Bog, obviously finding Cradle 90% of the time. The other 7% of the time is finding Dryad Arbor when you don't have a fetch land. Because if anyone's played Elves knows, the best turn one play is Green Sun for Dryad Arbor, turn two, Gaia's Cradle, we're off to the races.
Oh, yes.
This is what we're trying to do. So its ability to find Arbor, Cradle, Bajuka Bog. In a pinch, depending on if you really want it, you could do the Dark Depths combo. You can keep that into the deck as another angle of attack. So it went from playing 16 lands to 21 lands.
Yeah.
Very odd for an elf deck, but I wouldn't go back. Wouldn't change it for the world.
Good. And then our other team, their random was playing 8-cast in Legacy. We had Tyler on Amulet in Modern, an absolute powerhouse of a seat. That's exactly where we want Tyler. And then Sean was on, he was in Pioneer. I think he was on Phoenix. Yes, Sean was on Phoenix and Pioneer.
He was on Phoenix, and he entered the brick house.
Yeah.
Like, he ended up catching the red-black deck, thinking that he was going to crush it a lot. And what was happening was Graveyard Trespasser was just punching Phoenixes.
Yep.
So his game plan at that point is to try to resolve a thing in the ice, which he did a few times. But what winds up happening is nowadays is now Liliana the Veil's magic card that exists in Pioneer. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a little bit. But now that's not a game plan anymore. So I don't know if Phoenix is a good place to be, especially now for that tournament.
Yeah. So clearly neither team made day two. It's like, okay, let's start getting ready for Sunday for all of the classics, if you will. We had the Legacy pickup. He was going to be playing Legacy Classic. It was going to be myself, John, Sean, and Tyler all playing in the Modern Classic. And Jerry, you're going to slam that Pioneer Classic that day.
Yeah.
I
dropped at 4-1.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and get into that. So, like, I want everyone listening to just think, 4-1, why did Jerry drop?
All right. So it involved a very, very negative play experience to the point where I just didn't want to play. Like, and it was more of a straw that broke the camel's back thing. It was a bunch of little things throughout the past couple months of Magic. Because right now, you know, we've been playing enough Modern. We know we're not happy with the format as it is, so on and so forth. Get to that in a little bit, too. But what happened is my opponent attempted to do an angle shoot that didn't work out for him. Because we were both very verbally communicative. And it would be the type one of those things where, like, say, in this case, I had two Monastery Swift Spears out. One of them was targeted with a Liliana the Last Hope Shrink ability. Okay. And when blocks were declared with a 2/3 vampire with lifelink, he said, I'm blocking the shrunken one. And I said, okay, I'm going to put my Ember Cleave on the unshrunken one. And we were very, very clear about this.
Yeah.
Verbally, there was no physical marker on the table to denote which one's which. This is the important part. So then when the judge came, he ended up losing his mind. Screaming, throwing hands around. A couple of times, I thought he started slamming his hands on the table. I thought he was about to break out in the fists over this. This is how bad it got. The judge comes over. Little did we know, this was the judge who's had problems with people all weekend because of her thick accent. English is not her first language. Her first language is Portuguese. So when her and I talk, I do understand enough Portuguese to get by at least hearing what she says. So a few times when I spoke to her, I said, just tell me in easy Portuguese, you know, because it helps me. I can do that. I have that little special ability. Woohoo, military.
Yay.
But even then, her English wasn't that bad to where nobody deserves that type of behavior anyways, but her English wasn't that bad if you actually sat there and listened to her like you were supposed to.
Yeah.
And there was a fair warning given that day, because this is now day 3 of the SCG event, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And they said, whenever a judge is speaking, do not talk over this judge. Well, he continued to talk over her, continued to throw hands. And another judge noticed this, and she started asking me questions about his behavior. And I told her, like, this dude's got a real attitude problem. Like, he's about to fight. And head judge got involved, and he got a match loss. And then I dropped. I was like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm tired of this shit. Oh, sorry.
No, you're fine.
Like, I'm just, like, this ain't worth it. I don't, you know, winning's nice, but I come here to have fun. Now I'm not even having fun winning. Like,
yeah.
What am I even doing?
Yeah, like, what's the point of even putting yourself through something like that if it's not what it was originally intended to be, and that is fun?
Regardless of how, like, whichever way he blocks that Embercleave was killing him, he was trying to angle shoot his way out of it, and we would be going to a game three with him on the play, because I lost game one. Like, why are we wanting to die on this hill? I don't know, but it was the hill he wanted to die on, and according to the judge, he was sorry, he was crying, and I was like, he's only sorry because he just got punished. Like, he got a real punishment.
Yeah, like, it didn't possibly seem genuine.
No, it was just crocodile tears. I think, granted, I'm biased, because I was the offended party here, that his behavior was so uncalled for and so out of line, I think he should have been banned, or at least taken out of the event entirely. Like, security should have got him and walked him out.
Yeah, like, it's just uncalled for. It's a game. Like, to me, at the end of the day, that's what I don't understand when it comes to the cheaters, when it comes to the the incredibly sore losers and things like that. It's like, people, it's a game. It's a game that, I'll go ahead and say, was kind of designed for, like, kids. Yes, we enjoy playing it. It is a blast to play. The Gathering is the greatest experience that I enjoy about the game. But if you're going to get so emotionally wrecked by the rules of the game, or by bad luck, drawn cards, or things like that, or your opponent just outplaying you, play a new game. It's not worth it. Life is only so short. We're given so much time to be here. Don't get angry over a card game, or because somebody just happened to top deck every little card they need.
Now, as far as the rules interaction is concerned,
yes,
and because of the verbiage that was used between us and the witnesses next to us, because we're in a small, you know, elbows-to-elbows table sitting, the rules interaction is he did not put a denotative counter on top of the shrunken Monastery Swift Spear. Therefore, what applies is our verbiage and what was said. So the ruling was in my favor.
Gotcha.
Which I knew it was going to be. Yeah. I just didn't think it would explode like that.
Yeah.
Like, it turned a 2 into a 10. But as for the tournament itself, you know, I dropped it 4-1. I played against Rakdos midrange 4 times and Mono Blue Spirits once.
Nice.
I lost to... Now, here's an... Funny enough, talk about rules interactions and player interactions. Sean noticed something, and Sean was right. However, if I would have done something about it, it felt angle shooty.
Gotcha.
I'm not in the business of angle shooting.
Yeah.
I did really put it to him, though, after the incident occurred, that you need to have much tighter play. Like, this can't happen again. The interaction was the 4-mana Chandra Torch of Defiance.
Mm-hmm.
Her plus ability, you must choose whether you're casting that spell right then and there. He flipped a Graveyard Trespasser, and then he proceeded to Bone Crusher Giant my Eidolon. The whole goal was that he didn't want to take 4 damage from an Eidolon.
Gotcha.
However, you can't do that because of Chandra's timing restrictions.
Yeah.
Sean caught that and said something. I said, I knew what his intentions were as the player, so what we're going to do is, as 2 players, we can walk this back, and we can agree that you're going to net lose 4 life here. And that's how this is going to happen. You are not going to get that trigger from that Graveyard Trespasser. And we moved on with our day.
Yeah.
If I would have gone about it, called the judge, yeah, I know how the ruling would have went, but I would have felt really wrong. Like, that's just... angle shootiest of the angle shooty. It feels like almost like playing Pithing Needle and naming Bora Borogmos.
Ah, yes, the classic.
Like, yeah, I guess you're right, but we're angle shooting really hard.
You're not declaring your trample damage.
Yeah, like shit like that. Like, nobody likes you. Nobody likes that type of thing. I don't want to be that guy. Now, if the game state had gone way too far, like he'd done like a surveil trigger or something, okay, now we have a real problem.
Right.
Because now there's known information that shouldn't be known, stuff like that.
Gotcha. But big thing though, the good thing that came out of Baltimore is that Tyler ended up finishing 14th in the Modern Classic with Amulet Titan.
Yeah, he did.
At 6-2, and Sean finished 22nd with Four Color Glimpse, Elemental Glimpse, and also at 6-2, but missed out of top 16 on Breakers.
Yep. Tyler's last match, man, that guy had a hard, like he really didn't understand how he was supposed to really play against Amulet, to Tyler's credit. Tyler had a big advantage there. However, Tyler was doing something, at least because he didn't have a physical way to mark the different dryads. He had an issue. He had a layering issue that the player didn't understand. Now, I knew the answer. It's with Dryad of the Elysian Grove and Blood Moon interact in layers, where the last one that came into play is the effect that takes place. Yep. So Tyler played a Dryad. His opponent played a Blood Moon. Tyler played a new Dryad. For the entire remainder of the game, every single turn, he said, "This is the newest Dryad."
Yep.
He kept doing that to his credit. And he actually threw his opponent off somehow. Like, I didn't realize this was just a Jedi mind trick, but then I'm me. I already knew the rule on that one.
Yeah, I really think Tyler got into his mind on it. But yeah, no, he was very adamant about making sure his opponent stayed informed. So when his opponent went to kill a Dryad, his opponent knew which one he was killing. It's like, this is the one that makes my lands tap for everything. This is the one that has Blood Moon on top of it and is kind of useless. Other than the fact that it allows me to play extra lands.
Yeah, yeah. Lets me play 3 lands a turn.
Yep.
And kills his opponent with Inferno Titan, and his opponent has to read it.
Yep.
That one killed me too. It was like, huh, you have to read Inferno Titan? Now, I know what this card does from Standard and previous Moderns from years ago, but when your opponent has to read your cards, you know you're winning.
Yeah, and especially one like the Beast of Inferno Titan. Like, the guy had no idea it had fire breathing. And
I don't think he knew what fire breathing was.
Yeah,
when Tyler activated it,
because Tyler pumped it what, 6 times, I think.
He's like, he said, "I'm gonna activate fire breathing 6 times."
Yeah, he's like,
I'm like, I know what he said. I don't think you know what he said.
Got all my mountains. Click.
Oh, John learned a nice rules interaction too that weekend, involving Golgari Thug.
Yep.
When Golgari Thug dies, if there are no other creatures in your yard besides that Golgari Thug has to go to the top of your library. It is not a May trigger. This is required.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So that one kind of threw him off, but we'd lost that match already as a team.
Yep. No, it was a blast of a weekend. I did not get to play at all on Sunday, sadly. I was dealing with a personal issue at work. I can talk about it now. The investigation is over. But one of my sailors, so I lead a group of about 13 sailors on board my submarine, and one of them had their car stolen and subsequently wrecked on the interstate down here. And he got a phone call saying that we have recovered your car. You're being charged with a felony hit and run. Well, Sunday morning rolls around. He was supposed to report to work. We can't get a hold of him. He is not at work. And now the concerns start to happen. What's going on? Is he in jail? Is he in the hospital? You know, worst case scenario, because we're military, we also have to think, did this young sailor take his own life? We have to make sure that the sailor is safe. So all the phone calls ever are happening. I ended up having to drop out of the tournament after I already registered. Excellent experience, though. A+ to the staff there for allowing me to drop it based on the issues that was happening at the beginning of round one. So definitely huge kudos to them for that. Definitely made that easier for me. And then I just became a cheerleader for the rest of the day. We did find the sailor. He was passed out at a different apartment. And just recently, he was found free and clear of the felony hit and run. So that's good.
Did he get dinged for being AWOL for 3 hours?
Yes. Yes, he absolutely did. That was a very educational time for the young sailor. And I know, Jerry, you understand that. Anybody else out there in the military will understand what I mean by that.
Yeah, education.
But We've had another Star City event since then also. We've had SCG Columbus, which was a three-event 50K Modern Weekend that was hosted over Labor Day weekend. Events started Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It was two 20Ks and one 10K. So you can kind of think of this almost like a triple GP weekend, like back in Vegas 2016, Jerry.
Yeah.
Or Vegas 2017, I should say. But now picture the attendance for the main events at about 200 players.
That's a small event for that kind of money being thrown around.
Yes. Yes, that is. They lost money on both of the 20Ks, and they thankfully made money on the 10Ks. But there's a lot of things that you kind of have to look at this weekend, because I would say all in all, Star City has to evaluate this as a failed event, just on the business aspect.
So why do you think it failed?
Starting with the weekend of choice. It's Labor Day weekend. Generally, that is the final weekend before a lot of schools start back up. Families are going on their final vacations.
Paid holiday for a lot of people.
Yep. People are getting ready to go to college. Items like that. But maybe Star City thought they could take advantage of the potential. A lot of places give a four-day weekend for this. Oh, we can start on a Friday and roll it all the way through Sunday. Let's go. Doesn't look like it worked out that well. Another thing, too, it was in the city of Columbus, Ohio. Probably not the best city choice, I would say. I would expect something of this caliber to be maybe like Charlotte, Richmond, maybe Philadelphia, somewhere on the East Coast, or even Indianapolis, like a larger city where they can get a further reach of...
Right. So Indianapolis, at least, you know, Chicago's a day trip from there.
Exactly.
My thought was it's basically like a slightly less offensive Pro Tour Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Like kind of why is this big type of event doing out there? I did definitely think that.
And also too, maybe the fact that it was modern could have had an issue on it, or could have had an effect on it too.
Right. Last thing you did mention, and this does happen 5 times a year. I mean, I don't know how much of an effect it had on the event itself, but Ohio State did have a game that weekend.
That is correct. Yeah. Ohio State did have a home game that weekend. And, you know, it's not a small school, Big Ten school. And I can't remember who they played, but still, like, first game of the season.
Big Ten team or Notre Dame. that's what it would be.
People are going to show up for that.
But, you know, 80,000 seats in the stadium, that type of thing.
Yep.
I'm not saying that all Magic players like college football, but I know plenty of Magic players that do. So, yeah, that might play something into it. I don't know.
Yeah. They played number 5 Notre Dame that weekend.
Called it. It's either Notre Dame or a Big Ten team.
Yeah, no, that was the big, because both teams were top 5 at that point.
Right.
So there were a lot of things, I think, just going against them on this weekend.
Right. And I live in Notre Dame country. This place sucks on Notre Dame weekend.
Yeah.
I can't get nowhere, and I live in the middle of nowhere.
But my concern with it, though, is this will be another kind of like just, you know, sticky note that they'll have of competitive Magic is not what it used to be. We're going to tone back our events more.
They're going to do what they're going to do. They thought this was a good idea, and it shot themselves in the foot. Can't really say they're wrong on that, you know, that analysis. It was not a good weekend.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It wasn't a good weekend. There were some other people out there commenting on like Reddit and Twitter saying that all Baltimore and Columbus were too close together. To that, I kind of call bull. Again, if you go back to the peak of Star City Games and competitive Magic in the middle teens, we were having opens every weekend, just about, Jerry. It was about every weekend, every other weekend, we had opens across the country that were pulling 300 to 500 players for the main event alone. Yes. Sometimes more.
Yep. So I'm not buying that either.
Nope. The reason that the 10K had more players, though, is because if you look, those that made day 2 of the first 20K were playing on Saturday. So you had the Saturday crew, the crew that was able to get there for the weekend, Saturday, Sunday. So you got the people that obviously didn't make day two for Saturday, as well as everybody that played in the Friday, Saturday events that could play on Sunday. Whereas with the Saturday event, you only had the Saturday crew and those that didn't day two. Also, it would have been an expensive weekend. The main event was $80 per person, and I believe the 10K was about $50 or $60 per person. So even at $80 per person, though, the average was about $200 per 20K. They lost $4,000 on each one of those events just on registration.
What are you going to do about it?
Yep.
I think it's more just, like I said, poor. I think it's poor Star City planning, but they're not going to see it that way.
Yeah.
Whereas to where events run by Nerd Rage, totally hyping them up, they don't have this problem.
Oh, no.
Norm knows how to run events in a way to where he's not... He picks good weekends to run his events.
Yep.
So, if you're out in the Midwest, folks, Fort Wayne, Detroit, Chicago, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, St. Louis, Des Plaines, we want you.
Definitely do it, too. Chicago was my first energy event, and it was an absolute blast. It was well put together, well run. You know, again, a really good group of people to play with. They, too, have their spikes and their highly competitive players that run in that circuit, as well as just your casual players as well. So you're going to get a full wealth of play styles out of that event. All right. So before we get into the next topic, real quick plug here for Deep Dive Games down in Kings Bay, Georgia. St. Mary's, Georgia. Kings Bay is the naval base. Be sure to check them out anytime you're down in the area for all of your D&D, Magic the Gathering, and other hobby needs. Say hi to the owner, Matt Davis, for us. Matt Davis is an active duty submarine sailor, as well as their three founders of Deep Dive Games. But be sure to check them out for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. All right, Dominaria United has released. The hype is real. People are pulling their Legends cards and their collector packs, but we're not here to talk about any of that. I would say more so, Jerry, there's a few cards in Dominaria United that are actually making waves within not just Standard, but all the way through the Legacy, which we've alluded to previously.
Let's talk about the good one. I want to talk about the good one first. I want to talk about Leyline Binding.
Leyline Binding. All right.
That card is a fantastic option right now. It has single-handedly brought Indomitable Creativity back from kind of the cusp of trying to get into tier one, so now it's a tier one playable strategy, as now that deck has a reasonable one mana removal spell.
Yeah.
That can't get hit by a prismatic ending, which is fantastic. And it's another option that fits into your four color Omnath decks if you want it. You can maintain your four colors and then whatever black triome you need to make it cost one mana will make it accessible.
Exactly.
Like a one mana Oblivion Ring is obviously very strong.
Yeah, and one thing I think some newer players might not know, or even some of the older players might not understand, this is easily a turn two play because of the Triomes that we have. Triome, right. And then your Shockland for the other two colors that your Triome doesn't have, and now you're paying one white at instant speed to exile.
Right, yeah. I definitely saw it. Someone fetched a... what was it? I saw the Mardu Triome hit the battlefield, and then he fetched a Breeding Pool and played it for one, and I was like, mwah, perfect. Yep. That's probably the best card out of the set by far as design goes. Like, this is probably peak design for removal. It has a real cost to it. You have to be playing a specific archetype. It isn't free right out the gate, but with the proper deck design, it's very strong on turn two beyond.
Yes. I very much enjoy it too. And, you know, that there's still the risk that this card can go away. It's not an end-all, be-all exile. If Leyline Binding goes away, I get my permanent back. So that's one thing I kind of like about the backside of the card too.
Right. Yes. It's not the true Oblivion Ring. It's more of the Banishing Light. In the light, vein of Banishing Light, not Oblivion Ring, of course.
Yes. All right.
No shenanigans there.
Thankfully. Not yet, at least.
Quick nod at the Tribal Lords.
Okay.
Three of the five of them Leaf Crown Visionary, Runveld Horde Master, and Vidalion Hex Catcher. Yep. That's Elf, Goblin, and Merfolk. They're all seeing play as four ofs in their respectable tribes. They've had some success hitting the Elf one specifically has had a lot more success than the other two. Someone managed to do a run of 3 5-0s and 5 4-1s in leagues with Elves.
Nice. And this is Modern Elves?
Modern Elves, yeah. Modern Elves. These are all Modern. I don't think the deck is anywhere near as competitive as this person was making it to be. But obviously, if you run into the right matchups a lot of the time, these decks got a lot better. There are a lot more matchups where they used to be very good that they were having trouble with as time had gone on because of power creep. Now they've gotten some power creep lords to push them through.
Yep. Yeah, it's not just a straight +1/+1, but each with their own individual abilities. With Leaf Crown Visionary, for those that don't know, whenever you cast an elf spell, you may pay 1 green. If you do, draw a card. And that's one thing that's really nice about the elf list is being able to replenish your hand.
Another easy one, the last easy one, I guess, that definitely made a hit, Karn Silex.
Yeah.
The artifact legend for 3 mana. It's conveniently an artifact, conveniently 3 mana. It's going to be a forever wishboard card for Karn. If you get Karn the Great Creator, by the way.
Yeah.
So when you have natural Tron turn 3 or turn 3 find Tron with your expedition map, so on and so forth, you cast your Karn, minus your Karn, grab Karn's Silex, your opponent can no longer activate fetch lands.
Yeah, that's like the biggest thing with this is fetch lands are completely shut off until this card goes away.
And it's an Oblivion Stone when you need it.
Yep. Like that's even sweeter about this card.
Yep. It will forever be in Modern Tron until the end of Tron.
Now, one thing too, don't just get wrapped up about the mana abilities and fetch lands. If you are running Dismembers in your deck, you better have a black source after you cast this, because you also cannot just pay the Phyrexian 2 life.
Next thing is, if you're wishing this up, you should have already spent your gut shots and Dismembers at this point.
Exactly. Yep.
Hopefully.
But
yeah, good point. Your Phyrexian mana is no longer Phyrexian.
Nope.
You're paying real boy mana now.
Yeah. Have that Urborg ready to go.
The last card we want to talk about. This one's a bit of a doozy because of rules interactions and such.
Yep.
Sarah Paragon. For the listeners out there, listen very closely to the rules text when I get to the text box. But it is 2 white-white creature angel, 3 power, 4 toughness. Text box. Flying. Once during each of your turns, you may play a land from your graveyard or cast a permanent spell with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard. If you do, it gains. When this permanent is put into the graveyard from the battlefield, exile it, and you gain 2 life. Anyone who's had any know-how in Magic and anyone who's familiar with how cards interact when they change zones, this doesn't work the way it is written in the paper world. What happens is Sarah Paragon is attempting to tack an ability onto a card in a graveyard. When a card changes a zone from the graveyard to the battlefield, hand to the battlefield to hand, battlefield to graveyard, battlefield to exile, no matter which of these zones are, the card becomes a new object and it forgets everything else that might have happened to it while it was in that other zone. So what happens is, in the paper world, Sarah Paragon says, it has this ability as long as it's in the graveyard, but you're going to choose to put it onto the battlefield or cast it if it's a spell. Now it loses that ability because of the... this has created a issue where some people have been trying to pair this up with Wasteland and Urza Saga in Legacy. Like, this is a wild thing to do at your 4-mana slot. Big power jump from Palace Jailer shenanigans. Nothing has been said about Wizards because, as of this recording, it functions properly on Arena. It does not function on MTGO, but Death and Taxes isn't performing worth a darn right now. So I don't know if anyone's even, you know, I don't know if anyone besides the one person who saw it, you know, has caught on to it. Like, this feels like the time where they changed the legend rule and someone had 2 Hazarets on the battlefield by accident.
Nice.
Like, it feels like one of those moments, but no, it's not. It's actually in the rules of the game. This is how it's supposed to work based on rule 400.7, which the entire rule plus all of its little subsections A through I, 9 subsections to the exceptions to the rule, and all of the exceptions do not cover this instance of sticking an ability on a card in a graveyard.
Yep. Yeah, just because of that clear text of when it changes zones, it loses all memory of.
Right. The reason this rule exists where a card doesn't remember what it does between the zones it's in is because, like, if I were to play a card like I put Tainted Strike on a creature and you block, now it gets all these -1/-1 counters from Infect.
Yep.
It doesn't keep those counters when it goes to the grave. That's why the rule exists. Or in the case of like Yixalid Jailer, where it says cards in graveyards have no abilities, but I play the 1 black mana reanimate and I reanimate Gristlebrand. It's still an 8 mana card with no abilities in the graveyard, so it enters the battlefield, I lose 8 life, but now it has all those abilities again. Obviously, it didn't maintain Yixalid Jailer's effects because it changed zone.
Gotcha.
This probably needs to be addressed sooner than later, but nothing has been said. A couple of judges have been talking about this. One of them did a video on this. His name is Judge Dave. Lives up here in northern Indiana, of all places. Didn't know that. And he did a video on this. On this very interaction. And he goes through all the exceptions with the rule to the T. And explains them very clearly that none of these apply here.
Gotcha, okay.
And the way it would have to be reworded after we discussed it, it would add like 3 whole new lines of text and it would be a second paragraph. The card would be word soup at this point.
Yeah.
Which is what I think Wizards was trying to do. Now, on Arena, this card functions the way it's supposed to. So nobody's trying to do Field of Ruin shenanigans or anything like that inside the black-white midrange decks. They're still playing Wandering Emperor in the 4-drop slot.
Okay.
So, but the fact that this works in paper this way, it's kind of a misfire here. It's real sloppy design.
Yeah.
Like, you do not want this play pattern of repeated wastelands. And you mentioned earlier, well, what if we change it to, instead of a state-based effect, what if we change it to a trigger when it enters the battlefield?
Yeah.
Then you can still respond to it with sacrifice shenanigans.
Exactly, so yeah.
It would require a whole overhaul on the text box of the card. So, not a good look for one of your flagship mythics.
No.
But the judges, I forgot about this little part here.
Yes.
They've been talking about it. And if someone actually tries this on paper, Dave being a level 2, he's considering that the judges are just going to override this and play it like it does on Arena.
Play it the way that it's intended to be played.
The intended of design. Because any casual Joe out there, any casual guy who's been playing, Kitchen Table for a while, goes to his first FNM and plays this card, isn't going to be doing what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's just not how the card was designed. Not what it was designed for, but the rules of the game and the text on the card do not comply with the functions of Magic the Gathering.
Gotcha. All right. Well, and then, of course, in Dominaria United, we have to address the black sheep, if you will, of the set.
The black elephant in the room.
Oh, my gosh. Liliana has taken over Standard. I think, to no surprise, Liliana is starting to poke into Pioneer, which is what we expected from one of, at the time, in its day, I would say, one of the most powerful 3-mana planeswalkers ever to be printed. She did fantastic in Modern. Modern, though, has had its power creep, and it's gotten to the point where, Lily of the Veil just isn't strong enough anymore for Modern. I would say mostly thanks to Modern Horizon sets. They have definitely changed how we see Modern entirely as a whole. But we're going to now see Liliana all over in Pioneer, which is good for us who's had her and saw her go from nearly $100 down to about $45 or $50.
I think she's actually fine in Pioneer. Let me come out on the, out on a limb and say that.
Yeah.
There's enough things to punish Liliana in Pioneer to where it's not just running over the format. Obviously, it's in the best deck in the format right now. But, one of the answers to the Grixis midrange deck is the Abzan Greasefang deck. Liliana is absolutely terrible in that matchup. You side out all four of them because you do not want to be putting Eska's Chariot and Parhelion 2s in the graveyard. You can't be doing that. That deck also thrives off of Delve out of its own sideboard. It's a deck, one of many decks in Pioneer, that can abuse the graveyard in such a way to where Liliana is a non-factor. It actually is a net negative for the player using it.
Okay.
So the problem with it is Standard. So when Liliana was printed originally in Dark Ascension, the second set of the original Innistrad block, the entire format, the draft format and the constructed format was designed around everything interacting with the graveyard somehow. You had, you remember the time, you had Lingering Souls, you had Snapcaster Mage, you had Unburial Rites, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Obviously, these are really good answers to Liliana. Being in these piles means Liliana's plus one isn't as devastating as it can be if you're in a different type of strategy. Even in the next set over, Avacyn Restored, they went with a different angle of attack on dealing with Liliana and creating Miracles. Liliana obviously can't interact with the top card of your deck. And if the top card of my deck is Bonfire of the Damned, and I have 5 mana, I'm going to sweep your board, possibly your Liliana. If I have 6 or more mana, I'm going to completely 187 the game in my favor. People didn't like that design space, but it existed for a reason. There was a lot of... they could print powerful things in there, but other things were in there to keep those powerful pieces in check. Like a nice spider web in order. In Dominaria, we don't have that. We don't have the Lingering Souls of the format. We don't have Unburial Rites to keep in our hand and then buy back something twice. We don't. We have the total opposite, where we have Graveyard Trespasser, which is basically the second coming of Scavenging Ooze, and arguably even better. And that it hates on the grave when it enters the battlefield, it hates on the grave when it attacks, it gets bigger, and it has its own protective measures of giving itself ward by discarding a card, feeding its own ability to drain your opponent while exiling cards.
Yeah.
So even though in current Standard we have Faithful Mending, Tainted Indulgence, Shaldred's Restoration, and Titan of Industry, we actually just don't have an Esper Reanimator strategy because of Liliana Graveyard Trespasser. It just shuts that deck down. You can't function. So Liliana right now is going unchecked in Standard. Your Standard format right now is Mono Black, Black Red Oni Cult, Esper Midrange, Black White Midrange, Jund Windgrace. To their credit, that's a cool deck. Feels like an old Life from the Loam strategy made its way into Standard. If you're going to play Standard right now, your only option at winning is Liliana Graveyard Trespasser. And Meat Hook Massacre as your Languish or your Mutilate, depending on what time period you ever played Mono Black of the format.
Yeah, the first non-black deck that is on the Standard meta, again, this is just past week, though. It's a Gruul Aggro at 3.5%.
And that deck gets crushed by one copy of Meat Hook Massacre. Yeah. You actually just lose to that.
Rakdos Midrange is at 7. Grixis Midrange is 7.8. Jund Windgrace is 11.3. Mono Black is at 13. And Esper Midrange is at almost 15. So, yeah. It's Liliana or bust, it seems, in Modern.
Standard, bud.
Oh, sorry, Standard. Thank you. Yeah.
It's quite all right. Yeah, we usually talk about Modern. I'm the only one who really pays attention to Standard anymore. But, I mean, it's not that Liliana is actually a broken card. This is just a combination of a couple problems. That they put a very powerful card that we've known is very powerful back into Standard, and they didn't put any checks to it into the format.
But I think that's really it, though, we have for this episode. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Jared, do you have anything else you want to chat about real quick?
Let me end on a positive note.
Yes.
I do like what Dominaria United has done. It has sparked a lot of conversation. It's brought cards into Modern. It's brought cards into the Eternal formats. It sparked conversation on what it means to be into card design. And it sparks conversation on, do we really want certain things back in Standard?
Yes.
I really enjoy those talks. And I enjoy seeing cards come back. You know, I do really, you know, I have casted a lot of Liliana of the Veil in my day. Between 2011, 2014, if I wasn't casting Splinter Twins, I was casting Lilianas, which was really the antithesis to that.
Yeah.
So it holds a place in my heart, too.
Gotcha.
So positive note, I actually like the set. It's cool.
Yes. No, I am not upset with the set like previous sets. I actually very much enjoy it. And can't wait to see what else it has to bring to us. I will say, though, Jerry, our next episode we're going to do, we're going to bring on possibly two guests, and we're going to be talking Warhammer 40K.
Oh, man, I got to get brushed up. It's been so long.
Oh, no. We're talking Commander.
Oh, yeah! I forgot.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the real thing. I'm like, nope.
We should have some nice big announcements for that episode. It'll probably be about a week or two before we get into that. But thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Be sure to check us out on all of your social media outlets, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can find our podcast on all major podcast networks. And again, be sure to check out Deep Dive Games. But that's going to do it for us tonight. Y'all have a fantastic evening.
Oh, shit.